Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News Podcast. Barry Murphy is here again from the news team. I'm joined on the line by our news editor, Katrina Morrissey, deputy news editor, Amy Ford, and news correspondents, Declan O'Brien, Noel Barden, and Rachel Donovan. Over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll discuss how Minister McConnellogue has rolled back on suckler cull schemes and the IFA's recent climate summit. We'll also talk about the Minister's planned meeting with Caolta over its controversial deal with a UK investment fund, ICA protests, knackeries, fertiliser costs and the horse meat scandal of 2013. Lots to get through, so we'll kick on. Gina, over to yourself first. You report on page one that Minister McConnellogue has rolled back on the suckler cull schemes proposed in the Climate Action Plan. Look, Gina, this was a very controversial proposal before Christmas when it was announced in the Climate Action Plan. But he told 350 farmers at the IFA's Climate Summit in Limerick on Tuesday that the schemes within the plan in relation to suckler cull, that they're gone off the table. Is that then completely scrapped so, or will there still be some form of suckler reduction?
No, it seems from what the minister is saying that he is ruling out suckler exit and reduction schemes as they were presented to him in the first the Food Vision report and then translated from that into the Climate Action Plan. Bit of a surprise in one way and not a surprise in other ways. I suppose the farming organisations have been absolutely vociferous in their opposition to these schemes. Every one of them had come out and said they were against it. The INHFA, which is the Natura and Hill Farmers Association, had actually left the talks over this issue. They said they couldn't stand over a process where there was talk of cutting back or getting out of sucklers. And the other farm organisations had all, voiced their opposition to it in person and then in the reports themselves. But then I suppose there was also the heavyweight entry of Meat Industry Ireland, and that's the body that represents meat processors. And they also came out against the schemes. They said that it would decimate rural Ireland. They had, that it would cost tens of thousands of jobs and that it would result in factory closures with, the shockwaves going out into the rural economy from that. So who knows whether it was more the farm organisations or the factories that were most influential in the minister's decision, because he did say at the IFA summit on Tuesday that he had listened to their views, both farm organisations and the meat processors, and that those options of either cutting back or getting out schemes for suckler farmers were now off the table. He did leave the door open, Barry, for a dairy exit scheme. He said that it would that there had been some level of support for a cow reduction scheme on the dairy side, and that he's going to go back to the Dairy Vision Group and move on from there. So that will be interesting. I think the take-up of a dairy scheme is potentially small in comparison to what might have been there on the suckler side. And the reason I say that with some level of certainty is that despite the farm organisations saying they were against it, we actually did a survey of 800 farmers, readers of the Farmers Journal, suckler and beef farmers, and half of those, 50% of that 800, told us that they would be interested in either cutting back or getting out, depending on the financial incentive that was offered.
And you've mentioned the survey there, and I think it is fair to say, I think talking to a few older farmers myself, or farmers with very small suckler numbers, you know, that they would look at it if they were to pay to get out of suckler production or to reduce numbers. Will those farmers be unhappy with this kind of move by the minister, or is it, you know, uniformly across all the farm organisations, was it welcomed?
It certainly has been welcomed by the IFA. I spoke to Tim Cullinan at the event itself where the minister broke this news. He welcomed it. He wasn't in favour of any rash decisions being made on reduction or exit schemes. But as you say, Barry, I think as individual farmers, there are people that this would have suited. So, for example, you know, an older farmer who's maybe thinking of scaling back, maybe going into a bit of forestry on the farm as well. There's lots more attractive options there now in the forestry. That it might have suited them. So it would have been very much a farm by farm decision, I think. obviously, this has only happened in the last couple of days. We'll be carrying more on it in next week's paper. I suppose it ramps up the pressure now. If these reduction and exit schemes are off the table for sufferers, it ramps up the pressure on the other measures in the climate action plan. You know, things like the forestry, things like fertilizer reduction, all of those other measures now have to outperform expectations in order for us to hit the target that's set in the climate action plan. And Professor Tia Hennessy, we carry her comments on it in the paper this week. She says it's going to be very, very challenging to meet the target without these schemes.
Yeah, is it fair to say, though, still that the climate action plan, I know we reported before Christmas when it was launched that, you know, it's to push farmers out of livestock production. Will that still be the case despite the lack of inclusion now of suckler cull schemes?
I suppose the climate action plan has push and pull. So the push was, you know, to reduce livestock, those schemes that were there. The pull factor is the incentives that are in other schemes like organics, like some tillage schemes, like the forestry. And that was all going to kind of incentivize farmers to do something other than cattle, livestock, breeding cattle on their farms. So push and pull, I think some of the push is probably gone now because financial incentive is a push factor to get out as well as a pull, obviously, the finance of it. So very much interested to see what the minister has done by taking it off the table, I suppose, is he's removed any uncertainty. Again, going back to our survey that Adam Woods conducted among our readers, he found that 94% of suckler farmers that he surveyed were waiting to see the financial detail of these proposed packages before they made any decisions for this year. There's no uncertainty now. There is no schemes. So farmers will make their own decisions.
Yeah, not very much so. If a farmer has two or three older suckler cows that they're planning to get rid of, they might as well get rid of them now, I think, because there's no money coming their way in terms of a scheme on that front. But just look, you've a good spread on it on page four, Katrina, with some strong lines there from IFA President Tim Cullinan on farming not being the sacrificial lamb. And you've also plenty of expert and farm reviews. I suppose just very quickly, what are the main takeaways for readers this week?
The main takeaways for me were, I suppose, again, highlighting that fact of the amount of land that's going to be taken away from existing livestock systems. So those systems that we're familiar with, the sufferers and the dairy, you know, Ty Buckley, the IFA chief economist, went through the different factors and put an actual acreage beside them all. It amounts to 9% of land being taken out by one route or another out of the current livestock farming systems. The other one that I thought was very interesting, and I'm hoping to have more in next week's paper, is Lawrence Chalew gave a very good update on where Chagas research is in terms of the difference between calculated emissions from cattle and actual methane emissions from cattle. Also, he has an update on slurry mitigation measures. And one, I suppose, flashpoint on the day was a lot of farmers were very angry about the lowering of the proposed lowering of the slaughter age down to 22, 23 months. And their point being, and we've this expanded on in the paper, their point being that if this comes in, we'll have a very seasonal big glut of cattle going to factories and that will undermine price. So more on that, I think, in the weeks to come as well.
Just before we move on, folks, Katrina also spoke to IFA President Tim Cullinan at the Climate Summit on Tuesday. He shared his views on the scrapping of the suckler cull schemes within the Climate Action Plan and gave us his thinking on where the sector now needs to go. We hear from Cullinan now.
I think everybody agrees, you know, the adoptions the farmers have put in place already, you know, are working, and you know, the science is improving all of the time. And I think what we can achieve here is, you know, we can achieve our 25% reduction in emissions, you know, by holding on to the numbers that we have in the country and, you know, keep production up. I think that's critically important. And, you know, we heard it earlier on this morning as well, is that now our food is wanted. It's absolutely wanted right around the world. I think that's very positive. But look, going back to the minister, I think, you know, that on that context, I think it's very important that there wasn't a rash decision made to start reducing numbers. But, you know, where we need to go here now, though, is obviously, you know, as we all know, suckler farming is a very low income business, and, you know, we need proper funding around that now. And suckler farmers, like all other, like dairy farmers and all other farmers, you know, there is changes happening as we speak, and there's costs associated with that. So the piece that the minister didn't say today was how much funding he put in place, and, you know, that's going to be critically important as well.
Yeah, no, it's one that's going to carry on for a while. So Katrina, look, thanks for joining, and look, we'll stick with the minister briefly and move on to Declan O'Brien. Deck, on page 3, you report that the minister is to meet with Quilta on its controversial deal with UK investment firm Gresham House. Look, this story has grown some legs and it's proved controversial for the minister. Can you first give listeners a bit of a background to the Gresham deal and then maybe tell us where this meeting has come from?
Well, the Gresham House deal is a joint venture, really, with Quilta, where they're planning to purchase about 12,000 hectares of bare land and existing forestry. It's a forestry fund. It's part of Quilta's strategic plan to plant 100,000 hectares between now and 2050. So they're saying, look, at 50% of that 100,000 hectares is going to be commercial forestry, and that's where this joint venture with Gresham House comes from. Now, Gresham House last week launched the fund, the Irish Strategic Forestry Fund, and they said that they were looking to purchase 12,000 hectares of standing forests and bare land as a first-off measure. So everybody is up in arms over it because they're saying, okay, we're effectively here, got a state agency, Quilta, who are facilitating the transfer of land from Irish ownership to foreign ownership, because Gresham House is a massive asset management company or hedge fund which manages huge forestry estates internationally. It's the largest manager of forestry in Britain. It has 130,000 hectares. So they're saying it's going to drive up this drive to get 12,000 hectares is going to drive up land prices in an already hot market. And they're saying it's going to literally price particularly dry stock farmers out of the land market. So that's the background. And this week we reported that they had purchased their first, large tract of land. It's 1,100 acres outside Newport in North Tipperary on the slopes of Keeper Hill at a place called Castle Waller. So that was bought for $5.5 million. It was registered with the land registry just before Christmas. Now, in an interview with the with Quilta, which we'll be carrying in more detail next week, they said, look, there's always been private forestry interests in coming into Ireland. They said that of the 12,000 hectares, approximately 4,000 will only be bare land that will be purchased. The rest will be standing forests, existing forests. And also Quilta put to bed the idea that they were selling their land and forests to this new fund. They said that is not happening. This will be where they buy existing forests. It will be private forests. And obviously the bare land will be the bare land. So that is the scenario as it stands. But it's one which has driven the farm organisations and a lot in the private forestry sector into orbit. They're saying, okay, you're coming in as and acting like the white knight for the forestry sector. But the private foresters are saying, well, this mess was created by the department. It was created by the government because they didn't get a handle on the whole licensing issue. So if they had done their job and had the sector taking over and humming away, there'd be no need for this supposed white knight. It's a very emotive issue, and it's one which is going to run and run, and it's going to run and run locally when this fund comes in and starts buying locally.
Yeah, you said it yourself there, Dick, an emotive issue, and maybe coming from government's failure or supposed failure on forestry. And you've a comprehensive spread there on page 12 and 13 with lots of detail on the numbers and the deal, and plenty of more information for readers. But you do report that it's going to drive up land prices. To what extent will that be the case? You know, is this fund really going to come in and be kind of jostling farmers out of the way in terms of buying up land?
Well, who knows? Who knows? Like this will really be seen when they get going and get into action. But Like, you have a market at the moment that is really hot. And we've seen that in the leasing market. They're going to have to compete with, if they want to buy in the southern and eastern parts of the country, they're going to be competing with dairy farmers. Or they're going to be competing against dairy farmers indirectly, because people are going to say, well, I can lease my land to dairy farmers for up on 350 to 500 euros an acre and hold the land. So why do I need to sell? So it's going to be, those factors are going to play into it. How much land I'm going to get is going to be difficult to estimate. If they say they're only going to buy 4,000 acres or 4,000 hectares, that's still 10,000 acres. There's only 40,000 acres sold every year, and there's plenty of takers for it, and they're not making any new land. So this has yet to be seen where the price will go. But some in the industry reckon that it could drive the price of bare land for forestry, which at the moment is at five and a half to 6,500, that it could drive that land to 7,500 to 9,000. If it does that, it'll have put rockets under the whole market, really, and it'll just drive it to boiling point. So it's going to run.
Yeah, it's definitely going to grow some legs, and seems proven controversial for the minister so far anyway, Dick. But look, thanks for joining. I'm sure there'll be updates on that over the coming weeks. We move on to another row of sorts. And Amy, on page 18, your report of ICA protests over a member seeking accountability and transparency. Look, this is a really interesting one, a really interesting story for readers. And I saw there's from the photos that, members protested there during the week with signs saying membership, not censorship, saying that ICA stands for I can't answer, and a few different really interesting ones. You were at the protests. What are the main issues ICSA members are unhappy with?
Yeah, Barry. So I suppose the key thing is here that three members of the ICA's National Executive Board, the NEB as they call it, were removed from their positions on the board last October. Patricia Madden, Carol Grogan and Joanne Dunphy-Allen, they were all removed from the board last October, as I said. And they say that they were given no reason as to why they were removed. They needed two thirds of members on the board needed to vote a member off it. That was completed, and they say they've been given no reason. As you said there, look, the signs that were held up last Friday at the protest, ICA, I can't answer, reinstate the NEB3 and justice for the ICA3. The members that were there last Friday are very annoyed, I suppose, and upset in a way that they're angry at what has gone on. They're looking for openness, accountability and transparency. As you said, they're going to host another demonstration or protest this Friday outside ICA central office again on Merrion Road, where they were last Friday. And this is to coincide with the Crunty Women's Trust Zoom AGM. And we understand that there is the potential that two of the women that were voted off the NEB are going to be voted out as directors from the Country Women's Trust. So you have the ICA and the Country Women's Trust, CLG. The Country Women's Trust is the company essentially behind ICA as well. And that's what members are protesting on. They're upset. Many of them told us that they've written and they've been in touch with ICA and they've heard nothing back as to the removal of these three women. And that's what they're still looking for. They're looking for accountability and transparency. We've asked the ICA head office themselves about the issues and we've had no response either. So kind of clear to see why the frustration is there, and it'll be interesting to see where this does end up.
Yeah, very much so. And despite that lack of response from the ICA, both to members and to ourselves, look, it's very interesting reading there on page 18, and there's plenty of information in it. And kind of, Amy, just moving on to another row of sorts again. On page 7, you report that NACRIs are cutting services over issues with the department. This is a very interesting story again. And look, you report that they've downed tools on scrapie testing of dead sheep. Is this going to cause major issues for the farm sector now if NACRIs just close up shop? Or what are the real issues that they're concerned about?
Yeah, I suppose, look, to look at the timing of this, Barry, this is coming at the busiest time of year on livestock farms, well, those that are spring calving anyways. We're calving has started on farms, lambing is well underway across the country, as you well know yourself from at home. And obviously this time of year, mortality rates, you can have, where you've livestock, you've dead stock, but also during calving and lambing, there can be issues, and that results in obviously an increased use of the animal collection services or the knackeries. So they've been in touch with us, and they've contacted the department before Christmas and just after Christmas. And on Monday, earlier this week on Monday, they announced that they were not going to be carrying out scrapie testing of dead sheep. That's TSE testing of sheep. It's to comply with EU law. It's basically, the department runs it, but the knackeries carry it out essentially, and the department have to scrapie test 10,000 sheep per annum to comply with EU law on this essentially. So they've down tools on that, and they're saying that they want the Department of Agriculture to meet with them to resolve the issues it has highlighted. And what are those issues? I suppose, look, they're saying that obviously the war in Ukraine, more than any other sector, it's impacted their businesses, and that they want emergency funding to cope with the rising diesel, energy and labour costs that they are facing. They do receive state support, obviously, in relation to the collection and disposal of fallen animals under the fallen animal scheme. That's made up of two parts, essentially. The fallen animal TSE scheme, which tests animals for BSE for cattle, obviously, and then TSE for sheep for animals over 48 months, and the fallen farm stock scheme, which is animals under 48 months. They're saying without intervention from the department, they're saying that they could carry out a further cut in services, essentially, that they might curtail their services even further. And they have even threatened strike action and emails that the Farmers Journal has seen that's sent to the department. Now, the department has told us exclusively, basically, that the ACA requested an increase to the fee paid by the department for the collection of these animals. And in March 2022, they received a 58% increase. However, the ACA says that this doesn't cover their costs, that it's five or short, essentially, for overage cattle. The department has said that the ACA is obviously now requesting a further increase in the over 48 month fee, but the department have repeatedly requested them to submit details of the increased operating costs since March 2022. And they haven't received this information. So, there is a row going on there. It's fully broken down on page 7 of the paper, as you can read. And look, it's something as well, no more than the ICA. It's probably not going to go away anytime soon. And it's one we'll be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, as you said yourself, Amy, one we'll be keeping tabs on and reporting on over the next few weeks. But, it is a really maybe, I suppose, a challenge one for farmers now if knackery services are impacted, as you said yourself, during the busy calving and lambing period. So hope that gets sorted. Look, thanks, Amy. We'll move on to Noel Barton next, folks. And Noel, on page 11, you report that high fertiliser costs pose risks for food availability. Look, this is something I suppose we would have all maybe talked about over the last couple of months in relation to how farmers are buying less fertiliser and, are they then therefore producing less food. But the EU has made some findings or some predictions around it in a recent report. What have they said?
Yeah, Barry, so this is a report that came out of the European Commission recently, and it found that high fertiliser costs act as a risk to both food availability and then to consumers' access to food in the EU. So last year, I suppose, would have been a year of very high fertiliser costs. And what the Commission said in the report is that, first of all, farmers will cut back on usage, and this will impact yields and the amount of food that's available there to circulate in markets. But as well as that, the high costs will hit farm incomes. And if farmer incomes are down, farmers won't be investing as much. They won't be putting money back into their business to kind of safeguard yields and to safeguard their businesses into the future. And this kind of has a feedback effect, which could reduce future yields. It did say that if high fertilizer prices become the norm, that the EU could have to look at some sort of a subsidy system for fertiliser manufacturers. It said that if it was to look to shift the fertiliser manufacturing sector, which is very energy dependent, from natural gas to renewable energy, that it'd be a very significant challenge because it's such a high user of energy. There just isn't that amount of green energy there. And I suppose if we look to on the same page there. We have our own survey results, which found that most farmers this year are either going to look to keep their fertilizer usage the same as last year, and another 44% will look to cut back on fertilizer. And I suppose the half of the farmers that were surveyed that said they were going to keep it the same, we need to remember that by keeping it the same as it was last year, it'll be down around 20% or so on what it would have been the year before. So it's looking like the fertilizer crisis is going to have a lasting impact, that it wasn't just a one-year event. And I suppose farmers are looking to keep a tight rein on fertilizer and to keep a good eye on the cost here at home in Ireland.
Yeah, very much so, Noel, and plenty of information in that piece on page 11 from both sides, about the reduction in fertilizer use and then its impact on farmer investment and how that might impact food availability. So plenty of reading there for listeners. Moving on to Rachel Donovan next, folks. And Rachel, on page 20 and 21, you look back 10 years ago and we roll back the clock to the horse meat scandal of 2013. Look, it was huge news at the time, multiple players, and it's really interesting reading on those pages for listeners. Can you just give us a quick overview?
Yeah, for sure, Barry. So I was digging through the archives, and I suppose it was the 15th of January in 2013 when the horse meat scandal broke, and I suppose results of the Food Safety Authority of Ireland's DNA or equine DNA investigation found that Irish burgers on Irish shelves had been found to contain traces of horse meat. So of the 27 beef burgers analysed, 10 burgers sampled positive for equine DNA. I suppose it all came to a head when the burgers were traced back to the different meat processors, and ultimately there were some very large contracts lost as a result, Barry, with some major fast food giants in Ireland and the UK, of up to €30 million there, contracts worth €30 million. So that was a big blow for those meat processors who had those contracts. And as you said, that there's a big spread there, and so there's lots of pictures of old papers. I was looking through the archives and the big headlines at the time, and it was a big news story. But in saying that, it was a bad news story, I suppose. But looking back through it, and there, interestingly enough, there actually was a boost for the cattle trade at the time, and I suppose this was a mixture of for the first time in 18 years, a boatload of cattle were sent to Libya. And I suppose there was more, while the spotlight was on the lower end of the beef market, on the more processed end of beef, that the more quality end of the beef market saw a boost. More people were moving towards that sort of meat. And you know, you can even see there from some of the headlines that you know, burger sales dropped 42%. So there was a shift from that lower quality meat to the higher end.
Yeah, very much so, Rachel. It definitely got people thinking about what they were eating anyway, and what was in their burgers or their sausages and that kind of thing. And look, as you said, it was a massive story at the time, so it's always worthwhile to look back on these things. So plenty of interesting reading on page 20 and 21 for listeners. Look, thanks, Rachel, for joining the podcast. There's lots more in this week's paper, folks, including reporting from beef editor Adam Woods on page 3 that Wayland prices are to soar as exporters scramble for stock. We've also full analysis then from our team on the reopening of the Chinese market for Irish beef. More on those and all discussed by the team today in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. Thanks for joining and for listening. Safe farming, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.